Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Today on the HR Power Hour, we're going to have a favorite guest back, Cy Wakeman, a dynamic national speaker, business consultant, author, and trainer. Cy has been on the show before, and she is back because she has a new book called The Reality-Based Rules of the Workplace. Know what boosts your value, kills your chances, and will make you happier. And we're excited to have her back today. Welcome back, Cy.
Thank you, David. Glad to be here.
No, hey, you have a new book, which I know was just released last month. That's awesome. Tell me about it.
You know, it's really receiving rave reviews. It's called The Reality-Based Rules of the Workplace. And when we released Reality-Based Leadership, the leaders loved this whole idea of a revolution and leading differently. But they kept asking us, what do you have that we can give to our employees to really help them understand what will make them more successful at work and what will make them happier at work? And so I got busy writing the next book, which is not just for leaders, it's for everybody.
Well, I think what I like about it is not only do you say, know what boosts your value, kills your chances, and will make you happier. You know, it's not often you hear the combination of boost your value, kill your chances, and make you happier.
You know, that's so true, because most people, they have just come to expect work to stink, and they really believe if I'm going to be productive at work, it has to be, you know, at the expense of my own well-being. And our research really has sparked a concept that's really exciting to people, and that's that you can have peace and sanity and happiness at work and still achieve great results. Work doesn't have to suck.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We see a lot of surveys out there right now, and I know you've seen them and heard about it, where people are just saying, we are just struggling to get it all done. This is a big deal. So tell me what your perspective on that is.
You know, you're absolutely right. Not only the surveys, David, but when I'm on site with leaders and their teams, the teams feel very put upon. Employees are saying, you know, this workload is just not humanly possible. We have raised the bar too high. We have cut back too far. And when I hear that, I love it because it's so fixable, but only if you're really willing to look at things in a very new way. And so what I tell people to do in those cases is first, there's actually four steps, but first is change the story you've created about your own workload. So many of us believe that our suffering or our stress or our issues are the result of our circumstances. And that puts us at the mercy of our circumstances, which is really a joyless place to be. And so then to get relief, we focus on somehow getting our reality to change. It's as if we believe that it's our managers rather than the forces of competition that are determining what we need to deliver in our jobs, given current pay and such to compete in the marketplace. And we look to our leaders to fix it or take something off our plate. But here's the reality. Our circumstances are not the source of our stress. It's our story about the circumstances that's the true source. And we make up stories like we tell ourselves it's unfair, it's, you know, we're not supported, the expectations are unrealistic, my boss doesn't care, or the organization's trying to take advantage. And we create these stories, but if you really looked at just the facts, the only thing that is factual is simply that I'm being asked to grow and develop in proportion to the changes we're experiencing in the needs of our customers or the organization. And so when you get down to the facts, how can being asked to grow be such an insult? And that's where people really get their egos hung up. That's kind of the first step, is really start to change that story.
Well, you know, it's interesting you saying here, you are the source of your own misery. And I think, you know, not only does that talk about work, but we're talking about life in general, right? I mean, you either have a positive or a negative attitude, and you can bring that to work.
You really can. And we've kind of poo-pooed attitude as, you know, something that's just kind of a catchphrase or a cliche. But what most people don't realize is that suffering is completely optional. If you believe you're at the mercy of your circumstances, then you really are imprisoned. But once you get that suffering's optional, you're going to go through the same schedule today with joy or misery. Then that's ultimate freedom. You're like, wow, I get to determine how I experience my whole day.
You know, it's as I think about this, it goes back to really a little bit old school. Whereas you think about a generational difference, if you went back and talked to the greatest generation, they didn't think negatively. They only thought positively. It's almost like it's trying to make a comeback.
You know, it's trying to make a comeback, and I think we're calibrating and getting back on track, because over the last years, engagement was a really interesting topic, and many of us thought, you know, wow, it's great for employees to have great attitudes, and especially for those high-performer accountable folks, we would also love to give them great environments. But what we didn't just do is discern between those high accountables and low accountables. So we've tried to create environments that please everyone, and we've really erred on the side of pleasing a lot of the low performers at the expense of the high performers. There was a great study that just came out that said the happiest people at work are the low performers. And people questioned, they said, but Cy, you say happiness is related to accountability. And individually, my happiness is dependent on my accountability. Unfortunately, in the system, we can coddle the wrong folks. We can ensure happiness of our low performers, but that will destroy our results.
Well, it is rewarding the wrong group. I mean, in fact, what most organizations would want to do is, yes, they want to be fair, but, you know, the reality is there's a difference between being fair and being effective at times. And you don't want to coddle the low performers. You want to coddle the high performers.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of this is that we as leaders have fed into the story that circumstances cause, you know, the unhappiness. And our job as leaders is not to sympathize with folks and agree with them that these jobs are hard, but to really call them to greatness and help people really understand the true source of their stress. And that's actually, you know, the second thing I have people do who are struggling with loving their jobs is when you're faced with a job that's asking more from you, you know, the pain you experience is not the size of the job. The pain you experience is the fact that it reveals all the places that we're not ready, we're unready, and where we haven't kept up with the times or where our skills are outdated. Most of the time, our stress doesn't come from the fact that the scope of the job has changed, but from the fact that I haven't personally changed my approach to my job in years. And so if I'm trying to use the same tools, skills, and mindsets I used for years on a new situation, they just aren't going to work. And a leader's job is to really help people embrace that reality and change their thinking, that it's not just about having a positive attitude in the face of extraordinary circumstances. It's instead seeing reality for what it is, that my pain is about my lack of readiness, not about what my job's asking of me. If I'm ready, a change in my job requirements doesn't hurt at all.
You know, listening are a lot of HR professionals who may say, well, you know, Cy, that's probably true, and we have to make sure that our people are performing, and we have to make sure that we're looking at the levels, but yet, you know, we got to be fair. You know, HR has for years looked at everything being on an equal playing field, very fair. How do we balance that?
You know, and that's interesting because it is an HR mindset to say, you know, we've got to help our people get ready. And the reality is that people need to keep themselves ready. And how HR, in my opinion, interferes with that is by being fair, we muffle the voice of natural feedback. Because when I look at my frustration is such a powerful voice. It is feedback clearly indicating what's working and what's not working. But as an individual, we tend to ignore this clear feedback, which would require us to change, and instead we take this unaccountable approach, which blames the size of our job. And HR enables us in a way because, you know, we continue to say, you know, gosh, I know that, you know, we introduced the computer system a year ago and you're still struggling. What else can we do to help you step up? And the reality is that if I'm going to work in the 21st century, I need to be, to have really great technical skills so that computer systems don't hurt anymore. I mean, our first online tools were given to us in the 90s. We're 30 years into this. It's no longer a generational thing. It is that some people have not stepped up and really gotten great at one of the core responsibilities of most new jobs. Does that make sense?
No, it absolutely does. And I think this is, it's an interesting mindset. It's a change a little bit from probably where we have been to where we need to go. I have certainly read, you know, the book, and I think in this particular case, I fully agree that taking on personal responsibility more than having it always be the company's responsibility really not only drives an organization forward, but it builds the foundation of your team, right? It builds from the ground up everybody at a level of it's my responsibility, not just somebody to take care of me.
It is. And as an employee, I'm happier because I'm in control of my own destiny. Anytime we make ourselves dependent upon someone else, we get resentful. It's just what happens. And so, you know, I own my own business, and, you know, in order to do a webcast, my organization's not going to come teach me that, but if I want to be competitive in my marketplace, I need to quickly figure out what the best formats are, what the best platforms are. It involves my self-study. And, you know, people want to believe that the problem is the job got too big or the job's undoable or the expectations are unrealistic. And here's how I know it's untrue. If every time somebody tells me that the job is too big, I can go find somebody who's doing the same job well. So it's not the job. It's that the person doing the job well has worked so hard to constantly tweak their approach and flex their approach until they found something that worked. And these folks that just continue to do any size of job well, they are folks that they will tell you that they're working differently than they did even a month ago. This isn't just every couple of years updating your skills. This is constantly flexing your approach and being a continuous learner so that you know, you're stepping up. But if you aren't accountable for your role in this issue, then there's no incentive for you to learn. You can just continue to blame the organization. And I think a lot of the unemployment we're facing is not necessarily that there aren't jobs available. I talk to people every day who can't find the people that they want to work. They have open positions, and we have high unemployment.
We have thousands and thousands of open positions. We have tens of
absolutely.
Thousands of open positions.
And so it isn't unemployment or the economy. It's that many of us got caught unready in a poor economy, and now that has stagnated.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. And as I said, you know, there are many companies, we talk to them every day, that are looking for top talent, that are looking for talent that can provide a high-quality product, a high level, and they're just, you know, they get hundreds of applicants, and they just say, honestly, the quality is not there. The ability of someone to do some of the basic skill sets that are needed today, Excel, Word, even in some basic skill sets, just aren't there.
And we're taking a victim stance to it because when I interview people, they say, oh, I'm totally willing to learn. And I say, well, you've had a year off. What, you know, how have you gotten up to date on the new social media? And it's like, well, I'm willing. I'm willing. If you want to teach me, I'm willing to learn anything. I'll do anything to get the job. And I say, except use your year off to get better at social media.
Right. Well, you know, it's I'm willing to do it if you're going to pay me to do it. It's not me doing it on my own to help my career. But if you're going to pay me to take the time to do it, oh, I'll be happy to at that point.
Right. And that's just, you know, today not how the world works. It's we can't ask for benefits on the promise of results. In today's world, the people who deliver results are the ones that get benefits. And I think we're seeing this in a lot of companies. You know, recently Yahoo quit letting people work from home. And it was so intriguing to me to watch this thing play out in the media, because work from home was given as a benefit, not a reward for high accountability. So they gave everybody the benefit, the opportunity to work from home, and they didn't differentiate high or low accountables. And then when working from home decreased productivity overall, they canceled the benefit and brought everybody back to work. And a much better way to approach this is, if you're a high accountable and you've proven that you can deliver results regardless of circumstances, then we reward you with more freedom. You have the ability to work from home. And if your productivity goes down, then we take it away from you as an individual. But that would take a lot of great leadership to have honest interaction and conversations. And in HR, we enable by saying, oh, well, we'll just, the benefit didn't work. It's like, no, we didn't use it in the right way.
Well, you know, the approach was that this would be easier, right? We'll just mandate it that everybody comes back and we'll restart. Hit the reset button, if you want to call it, in this particular case. Let's go back to the way it used to be. And, you know, that just makes it easier. Everybody's here. We're going to have it done that way. And, you know, it's not really a one-size-fit-all answer.
Exactly. But it is an enabling answer, because instead of holding our leaders accountable for not managing the work, whether somebody was virtual or in the office, we cancel the benefit. And it's those types of things that we do that protect people from their natural consequences. Because what I learn from that, if I'm a low accountable, I learn that Yahoo is a crappy organization because they ripped me off, they gave me a benefit, and they took it away. But if we're holding people accountable, what they could learn is, when I take advantage of a work-from-home program and my productivity goes down, I no longer deserve that accommodation. I caused that. And we continue to separate people out from their consequences. You know, I want people to own their own freedom, how free it is. That if you're ready for what's next, then you're unfazed by changes. Another way we do this in HR and leadership is that we continue to believe we have communication problems, that we need to communicate more. And I was laughing. The other day I went into a company, and because I used their restroom, I knew their strategic plan, meaning they were over-communicating the strategic plan to the point where they posted it on the stalls in the bathroom. I mean, that's spoon-feeding employees to know the direction of the company, right?
Well, you do have their full undivided attention.
Exactly. But as I look at these communication issues people claim to have, and we really dig into them, their interaction issues, communicating is me trying to download information into you, your head, and your system. Interaction is in my conversation, where I continue to clarify and reset expectations and tie in what I need from you to the strategy. Those are interactions. They are taking real work as the hot topic and molding it rather than just communicating it. And so, you know, we try and work around people not interacting by over-communicating. And we just are tending to do things that just don't work in the long run.
We're talking with Cy Wakeman. Her new book, The Reality-Based Rules of the Workplace. We'll be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Established in 2009, CrossFit Cascabay is Portland's most experienced strength training facility. CrossFit is the principal strength and conditioning program for many police academies, elite special forces, champion martial artists, housewives, children, and everything in between. At CrossFit Cascabay, you'll be able to reduce stress, manage weight and body composition, enhance physical strength and endurance, improve flexibility, and recover from injury or illness in a safe environment. The time is now. Stop in for a free demo. For more information, please visit CrossFitCascoBay.com. CrossFit Casco Bay, forging elite fitness.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com. We are talking with Cy Wakeman, and we are talking about her new book, Reality-Based Rules of the Workplace. There are five, I understand, Cy. Five reality-based rules of the workplace. What are the fives?
You know, and the rules are important, and there is five, and they're important because if we learn the rules and follow the rules, we're happier and we're more valuable at work. We decrease our emotional expensiveness, which is what's draining our value. So the five rules really quickly, and we'll get into them. Number one, don't hope to be lucky. Choose to be happy. And that really, once you figure out that happiness is a choice and that your happiness is related not to your circumstances but to the amount of accountability you take for your circumstances, your whole world changes. And you're really able then to get clear about rule number two, which is, you know, suffering is optional, so ditch the drama. And we've already talked a bit about this in the first segment, but not only is suffering optional, most of it is self-imposed. And we don't realize that unconsciously we're creating drama all the time by complaining and creating stories and arguing with our reality. The third rule we want people to really know, and this is a huge change from in the past, is in today's workplace, we have to understand that buy-in just simply isn't optional. And we spend so much time opinionating when, in fact, the rule says it's your action, not your opinion, that adds value. And so often people want their opinion to count. And the issue with this is in the past, your expertise and your opinion were the same thing. The world was kind of flat and small, and, you know, our expertise and opinion were one and the same. And now expertise is so easy to get. You've been replaced by Google, and your opinions are usually what you use to stop the action. Expertise is what we use to make it happen. And so while I tell people I don't necessarily want your opinion, I do want your expertise. Help buy in wholeheartedly, support the decision, and make it work. And that is a valuable use of your expertise. Fourth rule is that, you know, change is an opportunity. You've heard this before, but we just need to say yes to what's next. This whole resistance piece, people believe change is hard, but their pain is coming from their resistance to change, their unreadiness, not from change itself. And so we've outlawed the word change in our organization. We just talk about what's next, what's the news of the day, what's our focus right now, because change being hard is only because we're very attached to the past, and we have a hard time letting go of it. But if we don't let go of the past, we aren't able to create the future. And then the last one is, you know, that you always have circumstances, but succeed anyway. When I ask people why they didn't get the results they wanted, the most common answer is to give me a set of reasons why they didn't get it done. I got interrupted. I didn't have time. I was pulled in many directions. I didn't have all the information. And they actually believe that their circumstances are the reasons they can't succeed. And the biggest mind shift we've got to make to be successful in this new workplace is that our circumstances aren't the reasons we can't succeed. They're the reality in which we must succeed. So how am I going to be productive all day at work, knowing I get interrupted, knowing priorities change, and knowing full well I simply will never have all the information I need? And removing those excuses and just succeeding anyway.
You know, these are five very solid-based rules that are in the workplace. And gosh knows, I'm sure that people listening out there are saying to themselves, there are times I wish my workplace was just like that. But it's probably not. So, you know, you've talked about this. Let's go a little deeper on each one just for a minute or two. And then I'd like to, when we come back for the next segment, maybe have an example of how an organization can move through this process. Because, you know, it's okay to say the rules, but it's one thing to go in and do the next thing and make the quote-unquote changes that have to happen to get to this. So let's talk a little bit about first the first one. Don't hope to be lucky. Choose to be happy. I know people will say, well, look, I'm a product of my environment. You know, I have a supervisor, I have a boss that doesn't allow me to change or doesn't allow me to do things. So these are opportunities that I can't change. That's not necessarily true, is it?
You know, it's not. It's easy. That's an easy belief system to have, because then I can be removed of any responsibility for my own situation. But what a miserable place to live in that mindset. We know that when we look at happiness, that it's so directly related to accountability, and it really is what gets you immunity from, you know, bad coworkers, bad bosses. These rules aren't the responsibility of the workplace. They're rules that if you play by them, you will add value and be happier. So these rules apply even when no one else plays by them. So let me give you an example. I had a boss that just did not give me feedback. And I would go to my mentor and complain to my mentor about the fact that this boss was like comatose. He wouldn't give me any information about what I could do differently. And she said, well, what's your approach been? I said, well, I wait for him to give me feedback. And she said, how's that work? And I said, it's not. And she said, then what can you do differently? And I said, well, I could go ask him for feedback. She's like, great, go do that. I got accountable. I went and asked him. I said, can I have some feedback? And he said, yeah, I'll give you feedback. You're doing great. And I went back to my mentor, and I go, see, I took accountability, and he still failed. It's still him. And she said, it's never him, it's you. How did you ask? I said, I asked for feedback. And she goes, what do you need to change in your approach? I said, well, I'll ask him a different question. I went in 17 days in a row, every morning, and I said, is there one thing I could do differently that would make your life easier today? And for 17 days, he said, I can't think of anything. You're great. And I knew I had areas to improve. So on the 17th day, he said, are you going to do this every day? I go, I am. I go, in case you think of anything. He goes, well, if I think of something, then, you know, that will quench your thirst. I go, absolutely. So I went in the next day, and he said, I think if you got both Coke and Pepsi in the break room, it would improve employee happiness, engagement. Now, many of us would say, after all this time, that's the ridiculous feedback, and we'd start judging him. I instead wanted to be the person who was easy to give feedback to. I said, brilliant idea. Within an hour, I had a Coke machine delivered, and I was back in his office. I said, what next? And over time, he gave me great feedback because he trusted that I could take feedback and I would deliver and take serious on what he said. Now, most people would believe if my boss doesn't give me feedback, there's nothing I can do. And there's always something you can do. There's always, we're always co-creating the situation.
The second one you talk about is ditch the drama. And I will tell you, there's nothing better than a drama-free zone. No question about it. So, but there are individuals, playing devil's advocate for a second, that sometimes are just drama kings and queens, for lack of a better term today. How do you deal with it when it's all around you? And maybe nobody's solving that problem, or they're still there, even after it's been like, oh, God, reported to HR or reported to the boss 10, 15, 20 times.
Absolutely. First thing is that the minute you start judging, you create your own source of drama. So it's stop judging and start helping. So if I'm surrounded by people in drama, I need to be very careful that I don't get righteous and go, well, I'm no drama, but they're all drama, because, bam, I just made drama. And I've really got to look at my part in it. If somebody walks by me and, you know, says something that is, you know, insulting or drama-filled, that may have taken 1 minute from my day. But it's me that gives it the next 4 hours, because what we tend to do with that is we think we're the victim. Somebody might walk by and say, hey, get back to work, and I'm offended by that. But I re-offend over and over. They took 1 minute. I go find four people, spend 20 minutes telling them the story. Now I'm offended again because I relived the story and I've offended them, and I've wasted 20 minutes. So the original person took a minute of drama, and I gave it 20 minutes, or sometimes 10 years. We remember back 10 years of drama. And so that's the first piece. But the second piece is really making sure that you're well-equipped to diffuse drama when it comes your way. When somebody comes up to me and says, oh, my gosh, have you heard about marketing? They're completely behind on our project, and they want to gossip and be dramatic about it. I tend to just redirect the energy. I go, oh, I didn't know that marketing is running a little behind. What should we be doing to help? And that completely diffuses the drama, because either we're going to talk about what we could do to help and go offer, or you're going to say to me, well, I'm not willing to help them catch up. And I'll go, great, what are we doing for lunch? And I can diffuse drama by my response to every single situation. But if I'm judging, if I go from passive to aggressiveness, I'm part of the drama. It's just not as obvious.
We're talking with Cy Wegman, The Reality-Based Rules of the Workplace, her new book, and we will be right back. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Packers.
Vikings.
We come from different places.
Uptown.
Downtown.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But when we live united, we make a real difference in the building blocks of life. Children succeed in school, families gain financial stability, the health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly so do our communities. Real change won't happen without you.
Live united.
So give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Sign up today at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. We're talking with Cy Wegman, national keynote speaker, business consultant, author, and trainer. And, of course, we're talking about her new book, The Reality-Based Rules of the Workplace. You know, Cy, before we went to break here, we were talking about your second rule, ditch the drama. And we were talking a little bit about the challenges that people have about people around them that have the drama issues. But one of the things that does happen, and we hear a lot, and I know you do too, about difficult people, people who are difficult to deal with, that maybe have issues or concerns that go beyond drama. How do you handle that?
You know, if there are issues that go beyond drama, you know, you always have those great exceptions that, you know, you can seek out advice and counsel from leaders. And that's really a great role for HR when we have those outliers to help strategize. But I would tell you that most of the people we deem to be outrageously inappropriate aren't. It's just our story about them. And, you know, what I tell people is I understand that you've got to work closely with people that you didn't choose, and that might lead to conflicts. But there's some key things to maintain your own happiness, and one of them just sounds so simple, but it's like stay in your lane. So often we forget there's really three lanes in life. There's lane one, that's my business. There's lane two, that's somebody else's business. And lane three is like, you know, the universe, reality's business. And the only time I've ever been stressed is when I'm outside my own lane. So when I'm worried about somebody else who talks too loud on the phone or somebody else who cuts me off or doesn't like my ideas, I'm in their lane. I'm determining how they should be acting. Well, my reality is that's how they're acting. If I got back in my lane and just conserved my energy and said, you know, forget about them. What can I do next that adds value? And stayed neutral about it. It's amazing how many situations those take care of. And then if we edit our story, you know, that person talks loud on purpose because we're in a cube environment and they do it because they don't care about others. And, you know, how would you know? Get mentally flexible. There's hundreds of reasons they could do that, talk loudly. Maybe they don't realize how their voice carries. Maybe some of the customers they're talking to are elderly and they're trying to be heard and be, you know, more clear about that. And so it's like, one, drop your story, and then this is the tough part because we want to work on others harder than we work on ourselves. Take a quick inventory of the things that you're doing that may have exacerbated the situation and what you can do to ease it. So you got to take a look at what's my part in the situation. I've never said anything, or I simply turn up my radio and increase the noise level, or I talk behind their back and create a dramatic work environment. I once had a mentor when I was complaining about others, and she said, Cy, that which is missing is that which you're not giving. If you think it's so easy to be a perfect cube mate, then you go first. be the change you want to see in the world. And you got to realize we're always co-creating, and my job is to stay out of your lane and give you the benefit of the doubt. And a lot of times ask how I can help, and we've talked about that. But another great piece of this is to confront the conflict in the spirit of being on the same team. And I mean confront the conflict. Most of the time we go to confront the person. That simply engages the ego, and it leads to defensiveness. And we're trying to impose our view of the world on another. We want to be right so that they're wrong. And there are multiple rights. That's what teams need to realize to move forward, is that there are many things that are true. And we've got to find that. So when I approach somebody, I don't confront them. I confront the conflict. I say, my relationship with you is not, as great as I would like it to be. And then I role model focusing on myself and fixing myself, because that's what I want them to do. And I say, what's one thing I could do differently that would improve our relationship? And I show my willingness to do that. And by focusing on myself, I leave sacred space. I leave space for other people to volunteer and step up to greatness as well.
We've talked about two so far of the five reality-based rules of the workplace. Don't hope to be lucky. Choose to be happy. Second, ditch the drama. Number three, you said this is a big one. Buy-in is not optional. Your action, not opinion, adds value.
You know, somewhere along the line, people have gotten this idea that there's this third option. So when I roll out something new to my team, I have a lot of folks who just wholeheartedly sign up. They're like, awesome. I'm not going to tell you why it won't work. I'm going to use my expertise to make it work, mitigate the risk, move this thing forward. That's how I add value. And I have some folks that just say, you know what, this is probably the time that I may need to part ways because I don't necessarily agree with that strategy, or it's not in my wheelhouse. And either of those answers are fabulous, honest, wonderful answers. But unfortunately, many people believe there's a third option. I'm not going to get on board wholeheartedly, and I'm not going to excuse myself honestly. Instead, I'm going to choose the third option, which is like stay and hate and stay and critique and stay and sabotage and stay and, you know, resist. And this buy-in is not optional. People really need to come to understand that buy-in is a verb that I do. It's not the organization's job to buy me in by trying to buy my love and up the ante, that they have a right to ask me to give my efforts towards a decided strategy, and that to come to work and add value, I need to give the gift of my buy-in.
You know, that's absolutely wonderful. It's, and the reason I say that is because you don't hear that very often. You know, a lot of professionals are so keen and so concerned that they have to have the buy-in, that they do flex sometimes so much that it almost waters down the message. So I think that
it really does, and we start to negotiate the non-negotiables.
That's right.
And then we think it's a strategy that didn't work, when in fact it was that we took a lot of half-hearted, highly resistant, negative people along to try and implement the strategy.
No, you're absolutely right. Well, that goes right into the next one. And I do have a question about this, because you said change is an opportunity, but you said get rid of the word change. So I have to ask, you put it in there.
What we have come to describe change, we usually use the word change to describe something negative. No one ever goes, so this is a change, I love it. They go, so this is a change, here's why it won't work. And so we've got to start reframing how we see change. And, you know, it's not just not getting upset if our cheese is moved. That's such a bare minimal standard. It's looking for the opportunity. If my marketplace is changing, where can I find the opportunity to be first to market next? How can I capitalize on it with an eye towards value? Surviving does not add value. Really finding the opportunity inherent in the change adds value. And one of the ways to focus on opportunity rather than the disadvantages of change is to start using different language. And that's why I say we've kind of eliminated that word. In order to just keep focused on the opportunity, we talk about what's next or what's possible or where the opportunities are. Because when you talk about it's changed, you're always anchoring it in the past. And that anchor just doesn't add value. But if you're talking about what's next, you're trying to anchor into the future, and a stronghold position there would pull us forward and would add a ton of value.
You know, your last and final tip here, the succeed anyway. I got to tell you, it's one of my favorite ones.
I grew up in leadership with bosses who gave me the gift of not accepting a single excuse. I would come to them with legitimate reasons why we couldn't move this through, and they would look at me like I had a third head, because they would say, but that's why I have you, is to find a way that in spite of those circumstances, we still can get it done. And I felt so victimized. I felt like so right that, you know, it's not right that you expect me to change the world. And I would get righteous, and I would collude with my buddies about how unfair it was, and I saw myself as a victim. But over time, I started to realize that if I take that approach, all I ever ended up with were reasons, stories, and excuses, because there always were circumstances, and no one was giving me bonus points for circumstances. In 1980, there were circumstances. In 1990, there were circumstances. So I started to see over 30 years that, you know, something can no longer be your excuse if it exists in the world every single day, that the reason you're not successful is that you haven't adapted to overcome that. And that's where I really came up with helping people understand when they find a reason that their work has been impaired or slowed down, that they have to regroup their mindset. That's not the reason they can't. That's the reality in which they must. And so change the question. It's not why I can't. It's how I could, even with this going on. And that involves radical acceptance of what is. It conserves our energy so that we're not fighting against reality, and we just radically accept reality. That ditches the drama, gets us accountable, gets us bought in quickly and wholehearted, gets us focusing on the opportunity of change, and that is where innovation and all these options open up. And I see millions of things I could do differently to move it forward. And I start to find that I'm immune or bulletproof, that I can, you know, I'm not dependent on circumstances or people for success. And that is the ultimate empowerment, freedom, engagement. And that's what I want us to create for people in this new revolution, is that they don't have to depend on leaders or systems for this, that it's all self-contained. They can flip the switch whenever they want.
We're talking with Cy Wakeman. Her book, The Reality-Based Rules of the Workplace. Know what boosts your value, kills your chances, and will make you happier. We'll be right back.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice, continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com. And we have been talking with Cy Wakeman, who's been doing a great job talking about her new book, The Reality-Based Rules of the Workplace. Cy, you know, you had a previous book before this. You've been on the show here, of course, talking about it. And that book was called Reality-Based Leadership, Ditch the Drama. Tell us how this second book came about and how it segues together with the two.
I started life as a therapist, and as I was promoted into leadership, and I went through kind of leadership boot camp, I was being taught some things that I really questioned given my training. I wondered if they would really work and if they were based on the evidence of what we know about humans and psychology. And as I tried to take kind of conventional wisdom in leadership and practice it with my people, I found out it just wasn't jiving with reality. And so I started to come up with some of the things that I knew would work in leadership and got amazing results with the teams I was leading, and went on to write Reality-Based Leadership as a kind of a tough love approach to leadership, and tough, yes, but lots of love as well, and really helping people understand how to drive results, drive engagement, and lead differently. And so leaders all over were really loving the book. They were making huge differences in their workplaces, and they began asking me. They would come up with, like, dog-eared copies of my first book that they had read, like, five times, and they could quote from the pages, and they said, "We're loving this. It's making such a difference, but how can we fast-track the growth of our employees? How can we get everybody on board so that everybody kind of knows the rules of the workplace, what will help and what will hinder?" And that's really when I took their advice, their request, and wrote the second book, because it's what I've been preaching for years in my coaching with individuals and with teams, and I just witnessed that it works really well. So I wanted to make sure everybody knew what they're doing that boosts their value and kills their chances.
You know, we're talking about reality-based rules of the workplace, and you talk a lot about emotional expensiveness in the book. Talk a little bit about what you mean by that, if you could.
Sure. You know, most of us, the feedback, if we get feedback, is around our performance, how we meet job expectations. And, you know, it's such a limited piece of information, piece of data. And when we started looking at value that hit the bottom line, that grew market share, that increased sales, that type of value for an organization, and we looked at performance, we didn't see a linkage. We had groups that had top performers delivering horrible results. We had groups that had average performers delivering pretty good results. We soon noticed that was broken, and we wanted to figure out why your great performance didn't translate into results. Where's the leak? And as we studied this, we found that there definitely was a leak. And it was drama. It was emotional expensiveness. And no one was really talking about emotional expensiveness. And what that is it's the total cost of you in addition to your salary and benefits. You know, how much I get these results from you, but how much do they really cost me? If you are low drama, personally accountable, you don't blame other people, you're great at change, and I give you something, you deliver results, that was a bargain.
You're hired.
Those are high-value results. But if just to get you to fill in your expense report, I've got to remind you and telephone you and threaten you with written warnings to pay you your own expenses, then those are expensive results. I am not getting my value. And so once we came up with the term, people's minds clicked into that, and they were like, I get it. I wondered, what was the missing conversation, the missing part of the equation? And so now we're working on emotional expensiveness, because if you decrease that, you skyrocket people's value, which then skyrockets the organization's value.
Well, you talk about that, right? Boosting your value to make you more successful and fulfill your career. Kind of talk about how to get these rock star performers to get to that point.
Absolutely. And, you know, boosting your value, first you've got to really understand your true value. And so the first three chapters of the book, I help people on their own rate themselves honestly about, you know, are you a drama diffuser? Are you, you know, an energy vampire, as some of my colleagues call those high maintenance folks? And so what we do with organizations is we've identified the five competencies that make someone emotionally inexpensive. And those are personal accountability, reality-based thinking, capitalizing on change, driving for results, and organizational alignment. And it's no coincidence that each of those competencies relate to one of the rules of the workplace. But from an organization standpoint, we want people to first get really good at doing better math. So instead of rating people's performance, we want them to really understand employee value, and that's why we give them the equation. And then we want them to start coaching on those competencies, training and developing in those competencies, refusing to negotiate or accept behavior that's outside of those competencies, and then eventually go on to hire for promote for, and even adapt their engagement survey system to only listen to the high accountables and start to discern the people in their workplace by their value, by their emotional expensiveness, and really ditch the drama. And so we're coming up with tool after tool after tool to help people do that.
You know, in the book, I know you have some great tips. For example, the one question you must ask your boss to improve your job security, the five most common reasons people hate their job, and how to stop using them as excuses. I think those are great. And I'm not going to tell them what they are today because I think they have to get the book. The book is the key here, ladies and gentlemen, to pick it up so that you can find out great answers. Again, the book is The Reality-Based Rules of the Workplace. Know what boosts your value, kills your chances, and will make you happier. And, Cy, I got to tell you, I saw you up at the main HR convention in May. Did a great job, as always, and certainly it was great seeing you. What's going on in June?
In June, we're at the New England SHRM, and we're just doing a lot of work throughout the country promoting the book and just really helping people get happier at work with better results.
Well, you know, I'm going to see you again at the New England Strategic Conference. It's going to be in October because I'll be at
in
that
October.
There. Yeah, that's in New Hampshire up at Mount Washington. Of course, New England Law Publishers, a great sponsor of the show. So we appreciate them being on board. And I know you're going to have a great time up there. And this year, we won't have the hurricane that happened last year, hopefully. So it was
Hopefully.
But it's assured us we're not going to have that happen. So that's okay. That's all right. Cy, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
If somebody wants to reach you, they can reach you at?
They need to head out to CyWakeman.com or RealityBasedLeadership.com. And that is a really worthy place to go because we have free webinars every month you can sign up for and join in the conversation every single month.
And of course, at the end of the show on HRPowerHour.com, the podcast of this show will be available to be downloaded and listened to anytime, as well as a link to your site will be there. Again, Cy, thank you for being on the show.
You're welcome.
And now your HR tip of the week. Recruiters are divided over whether the cover letter is still useful. Some say it's an outdated tradition, while others swear it's the key to snagging a job. In theory, the cover letter is a great idea. It's intended to be a direct line of communication to people who are making hiring decisions. That is, of course, if they actually read it. Recent statistics show that 90% ignore the cover letter, and 97% make a decision whether to interview or not based on the resume, not the cover letter. So the real question is whether it has value. When you fill out online applications, it may require a section for a cover letter. It is recommended that if requested, you put in one. If not, leave it out. If you're sending your resume in by email, as most do today, then it's really a cover email you're looking for. Something short, something sweet, and gets right to the point because the reality is, again, you have about 5 seconds to capture their attention. So cover letters are not dead. But they're dying fast. And that's your HR Tip of the Week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we are going to be talking with Linda Vero. She is the president at Broadreach Public Relations here in Portland, Maine, and an adjunct professor at Thomas College. We're going to be talking about HR trends, we're going to be talking about HR challenges, and we're going to be talking about how HR needs to adapt to the modern changes of a changing world. Thank you for listening and catch us every week at 2 p.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.